Our next guest needs no introduction. They have been rocking audiences for over 50 years, coming to Edmonton and playing the River Cree this week. Mr. Pete Agnew of Nazareth. Dante, welcome to the Raven, Pete.
Thanks very much. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Happy to hear from you today.
Well, at last, we managed to get in touch with each other. This has taken a wee while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a little bit, but we got it figured out. So you guys have been rocking audiences for over 50 years. When you and Dan and Maddie fired this band up in the late 60s, did you ever think that you would be here 50 years later, or was this a lifelong venture from the very beginning?
No, I don't think anybody thought that back in those days. You know, we all thought that, everybody thought that Frank Sinatra had been around a long, long time. Of course, we've all gone longer than him now. You know?
Yeah.
So nobody ever thought, you know, the Rolling Stones and the stuff like that was still going to be getting, you know, maybe one of the biggest selling tours of 2024, would you? But there you go. That's the way it's turned out, and I'm very happy about it.
Now, I have to address this. I heard a rumor once that the Wilson gals from Heart, that they copped the Barracuda riff from the This Flight Tonight riff. I can't listen to Barracuda without hearing it. Is there any truth to this rumor, and can you tell our listeners anything about it?
We saw Heart in a club, a little club. It was in Vancouver, I think, or Seattle. And the band were playing, we'd been playing a tour over there. And we thought they were really great, this band. And we told our, we went home and we told our managers about this band we'd seen, and we said, they're really great, you know, you really should think about signing them. And they said, what, there's two, they said, the very words were, they got two chicks in the band. No way, man, that's trouble. And the next thing, Fleetwood Mac were the biggest band on the planet, you know, well, I thought that was funny. But anyway, to cut a long story short, Heart eventually did record, and they were great, and we did a long European tour. And we took them out as a support band in Germany and Holland and, you know, Switzerland and Austria. It was a big, long tour, a big, long summer tour. And Heart were supporting us on that tour. And This Flight Tonight was a huge hit in Germany, and we used to play it every night. And then Heart went back, and they had a song called Barracuda. So I'm not saying that they had it from This Flight Tonight, but they maybe heard This Flight Tonight a few times before they...
Yeah, right?
You know, so I'm not saying.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny you should mention that, because we played an American tour earlier on this year, and I met two of the lads, the drummer and the bass player from Heart, come along to see us. In America there, it was funny. You know, it's a long time since I've seen them. The original boys. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They were a good band, actually. We used to, and we played with them quite a few times after they sort of made it really big. We actually we opened for them a couple of times in the States later on in our career, you know. As I say, a good band. I mean, you know, when you get things that sound, as I say, when you get a song that sounds suspiciously like the same thing, I think what you do is you get the idea from another one. No, it's not stealing something.
Mm-hmm.
You get the idea. If you had a listen to all our songs, I could tell you where that idea came from and that idea came from and that idea from different people that we liked. But, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you know, you wouldn't be able to say that we actually stole
yeah.
it, you know. What you're doing is you're being influenced by it. That's what you say. That's what
yeah,
you say.
And nobody can put a copyright on Chugging on that E string, right?
Anyway, Barracuda is a great track, and all the best to Heart. I think they're a wonderful band.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you're one of the founding members of Nazareth, obviously, and to me, one of the many things that set Nazareth apart from a lot of bands was the lead vocal. So firstly, I wanted to offer condolences on the loss of Dan a couple years ago.
Mm.
And when
we're not getting any younger.
But when Dan left in 2013 for his health reasons, there was a couple year gap in there. Did you find it difficult to find the right vocalist to front Nazareth? And what was it that Carl brings to the stage that enabled him to fill those shoes?
Yeah, well, basically when we were trying to get somebody. When we decided that we were going to continue, we were going to get somebody in, we were getting, you can imagine, we were getting a lot of demo songs sent to us by a lot of singers who were looking to do the job. And they were all sort of Dan sound-alikes, you know. They were all either they sounded like Dan or they were trying to sound like Dan, you know, that kind of thing. And we didn't want that. We didn't want anything like that. When they said, if we're going to do it, it's going to be somebody else, you know, doing the things their kind of way. You know, we need a change. because I mean the fans don't want to come along and listen to a Dan impersonator. You know, it's not. And also, the would have got crucified in the media, so we didn't want to do that. And once I found, it was a friend of mine pointed me in the direction of Carol, said, have a listen to this guy, you know, he's a good singer. So then I saw the guy singing, and I thought, this is just exactly what we're needing. You know, the guy's got a really good voice, he's a really good singer, but he doesn't sound anything like Dan, but he does his sort of interpretation, if you like, than as of the songs, and it just clicked. You know, when we got on stage, it fitted. You know, we all fitted. That was the main thing, and I think he's made a reputation for himself with Nazareth now. He's been with us now for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Carol's got quite a following now. You know, and we've got we've developed a different style. You do, you know,
yeah.
Bands change anyway. But as you see, the thing is, the hardest thing to replace with any band, obviously, is a vocalist. I mean, you can, people change drummers, they do, and they change bass players, and you change guitar players. It doesn't matter so much because, you know, any amount of young guys out there that can give you a Ritchie Blackmore solo, you know, and any amount of young guys out there can Jimi Hendrix impersonators, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get that many people that, you know, you can't, you could replace Keith Richards, you know, but you'd have a hard job replacing Mick Jagger.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
And that's not because he's the greatest singer in the world, but it's because he's Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
It's the sound, you know, so people get that sound and they recognize that band with that guy's voice. So it's a very, very difficult thing to change things. I mean, at the time, you know, I wasn't really all that keen on doing it. We thought at the time, nah, no, we'll just say goodbye. But Dan was quite adamant as well. He said, no, and you know, guys, you've got to keep playing, you know, I mean, he liked the band. You know, he wanted us to keep going as well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So I'm kind of glad we did now, you know, because it's worked out wonderfully well. As anybody will see when you see it in Edmonton. I mean, I'm sure we'll have a great night there tomorrow night, and they're all going to love Carl. You know?
Absolutely. Now, you know, you obviously have some advice for you know, aspiring musicians. You've been doing this for a long time. What advice can you give someone who's just getting into the industry right now?
Say nothing. Right, you don't want to be getting into it. No, really, I mean, I don't think it's hard to say if there's an industry anymore. I mean, it's a very weird thing, the music thing now. I mean, making records is just and when you make a record now, if it costs you like $100,000, well, you've just made $100,000 calling card, because I mean, everybody's going to get it for free. You're not going to make any money. So I don't know how young guys. I really, really, really am happy that I'm not starting out today, because it's a completely different thing. I can't really give advice on something that I don't understand that much, because what's happening now is it's the, you know, what they call this social media or the internet, all this stuff. You know, a guy now can bring. You know, we've said before that it could be harder for them because you didn't have record companies, you know, to back you up as we did. In the early days, you know, and you went out, you played, you put your record out, the record company spent a bit of money on you doing that. I know they don't have that, but then on the other hand, what you've got, they've got guys now, they're making an album in their mum's living room, and they're putting it out, and somebody in Tokyo is playing it later that night, because they've got it out all over the world. So it's a different way of doing things now, you know, it's a different way of getting your music out to people. I think it's a difficult. The thing I don't understand about it now is, you see, we can come and play all these concerts all over the world because of the records, you know, that we'd had out, and you sold your records, and then you went out and you did the concerts. Nowadays, you know, nobody pays any money for records anymore, so there's no way to make a living of selling records, unless you're Taylor Swift or somebody like that, you know.
Exactly.
But unless you, if you're just, I mean, even, you know, guys like Deep Purple bring out an album, I mean, it's a waste of time. Elton John has even said he's not going to make any more because you sell nothing, you know, you sell absolutely nothing. So they can't make a living out of that. So how they make a living is by going out and playing live, and that's where you see all the big bands. That's where you see people like the Stones and all that all touring. No, that's where the money is now, is touring. In the old days, it used to be you toured to sell a record. Nowadays, you tour to make a living. Now, the young guys, how do they get out and tour if they don't have a big famous record, you know? How do you do it? You know, it's a very, very, it's a strange business.
Yeah.
It's
definitely a different animal than it was when you guys were coming up in the 70s.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Excuse me, that's Matt on the phone's going here. That's
no
it.
Worries.
I'll just turn the sound off. It's a call from Germany again. Sorry about this. There you go. There you go.
You got a little hoochie coochie man for your ringtone.
So anyway, yeah, no, I mean, as I say, all the best of luck to the young guys that are playing. We get bands coming out in Europe supporting us, you know, as support bands, and all very, very good bands, young bands, and they tell you the same thing, you know, how do they get big enough to do a big tour on their own because they can't sell any records, you know.
Yeah,
it's a hard business for youngsters coming out now, you know.
Absolutely. Now, you guys have spent a huge part of your life on the road and traveled Canada so many times over the years. What's one of your favorite things about playing in Canada?
Oh, I mean, it's almost like playing at home for us, you know. I mean, Canada's always been great for us. The first tour we did, I think it was 1974. I mean, when we started playing it, we get hits in Canada before we did in America. You know, we get the hits in Canada, but at the same time as we did in Europe. So the band was always very big over here, you mm-hmm. know. And bands would come and do an American tour. We used to come and do a Canadian tour. You know, we were one of the only bands that did that.
Yeah.
You know, from Europe, we come and used to just we're going to Canada for 6 weeks. You know, it's a great country for us. You know, and still is. And it's just, I don't know, just we know so many. I know an awful lot of Canadians now. Yeah. Let me tell you, yeah. Over the years. I mean, we're with an agency here. It's a Canadian Classic Rock is the name of the agency. They're out of Vancouver, and they've got everybody. You know, all the Canadian, all the big rock bands. You know, the whole lot. You know, everybody's on that. And Nazareth. And I'm sure a lot of people think Nazareth are a Canadian band.
You
know?
Yeah.
So on this Canadian Classic Rock agency, there's all these bands, all these huge Canadian bands, and Nazareth. So there you go.
Yeah.
So I think we're kind of, what do you call it? Honorary citizens.
Yeah. I'm surprised you guys aren't citizens, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're doing all over the place. You know?
Yeah. Now, as a songwriter myself, aside from radio, I'm always picking the brain of some of the songwriters I get a chance to chat with. When it comes to environments, are you able just to put pen to paper and start churning out tunes anywhere, or do certain places and environments bring out the better side of your creativity?
I think on tour, actually, for me, there's a lot of people that you sit down getting a quiet room or whatever. There's no rules, you know, about it, what you feel. I've done it where I've just been sitting and mucking around with the guitar, and you come up with, you know, something, you know. But what I used to always do, even before like the mobile phones, is in my car I would always have, you know, a little recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Because the amount of things you come up with in your head when you're driving, you know, the things that go through your head, little ideas and little bits of tunes, little, you know,
melodies,
lyrics.
Yeah.
So I always had that thing so I could click it on and record it, because you will forget it.
Yeah.
You know, no matter, if you're a songwriter,
yeah.
You know that if you get an idea when you're up at the supermarket and you think it's so fantastic, you'll never forget it. You know by the time you get home, you have no idea. It's gone.
It's gone,
you know?
Yeah.
It's got to get put down right away, you know. So nowadays, of course, with the mobile phone, it's so easy. You know, you can do that. But, I mean, so going back to your question, I think I really, really get a lot of ideas, just not from the road, not from the touring, just while I'm touring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my head seems to be in a different place, and I do get a lot of songwriting ideas when I'm doing that. But like I say, I mean, what was the big test for everybody there? Was the COVID thing. That was kind of funny, actually, because that was 2 years when we were all stuck in our houses. You remember that?
Yeah.
Everybody was stuck at home.
And wondering.
And that was something else. And then, of course, we all got together because we recorded just after that as well. And everybody got together and said, "Look, Kieran, have we been writing songs?" "Of course we have. What else have we been doing?" So everybody's got these songs. And I was then playing through all the things I'd written, and I mean, I got depressed just listening to them. So I thought, well, no, I'm not letting anybody hear this. So I think out of about 15 songs, I got one, you know, that was any use.
Yeah.
So obviously, being confined to headquarters isn't good for me. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope we don't have to do that again.
Yeah, but some other people, you know, it works for other folk, you know. I mean, when the boys were off, when the guys in the band were off, and we got back together and we did the last album, that's Surviving the Law, they all wrote the stuff under the same conditions, and it's some of the best material they've ever written. So, you know, take it from there.
Everybody's different, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
In all those 50 years and thousands of stages, is there any one stage that stands out for you as the most memorable performance that you guys have done?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know the ones that we were just... We've got a young crew here. We've got a new young crew with us. All the older guys all kind of retired after the COVID thing. And you're coming along and you're playing and you get one of these horror things where everything is absolutely terrible, about everything breaking down and everything. And we'd sit to them, you see the crew, they're going, "God almighty," you know. And I said, "That's the ones you'll remember, boys," you know, because you get 50 great gigs. And you'll be hard placed to remember where that one was and where that was. But you get one real stinker, right? Someplace where you were suffering to get to it, and suffering when you go, and you remember that. So if you ask the guys, you know, what's the worst gig you ever played?
Yeah.
They might not be able to give you the worst one, but they'll be able to tell you, you know, they'll be the top 10 of, you know, we'd rather not remember, but we do remember. But you get some really great gig. We're like, even on the tour here, you know, we say, "That was a great show. Where was that again?" You know, the guys will say that, you know. And that's only 2 weeks after it, you know. So it's, we've had some great laughs and big. I mean, they're one of the ones that you were talking about, Hart, earlier on there. We did a gig back, way back. It was a memorable one. It was in the Superdome in New Orleans. And it was Van Halen and Hart and Nazareth and Sammy Hagar and who else was on? I think I'm trying to remember who else. Boston. That was one. You remember that? But I don't remember it because of the gig. I remember because it was the Superdome. You know, you don't play the Superdome every week. You know, so I remember that one. I remember playing RFK Stadium with Aerosmith. One of the big ones we remember, but I did Anaheim Stadium with Alice Cooper. That was good. That was
big shows, right? Yeah.
So those ones are kind of memorable, but I wouldn't say they were the best shows. You know, there's the nights that you probably played best. In fact, I know for a fact the nights that we've played best and where the band's really been burning and could do anything, it's been in some wee club someplace, and we can't even remember where it was. Probably in Romania or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe in Edmonton, right? Absolutely. Now, if you could collaborate with one artist that you haven't already, be it dead or alive, who would that one artist be that Pete would sit down with and jam out with?
Well, I mean, there's two guys. Paul Rogers is phenomenal. I just went to dinner with Paul a couple of nights ago, a couple of days ago in BC. That's where he lives now. Paul, one of the best singers on the planet.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I'd like to work with him. Lowell George of Little Feet was the man, but I mean, he's been gone for a long, long time now. I suppose he was a complete genius. I would admire him a lot. Those guys.
Amazing. Once again, Pete Agnew, one of the founders of Legendary Rockers Nazareth. They're coming to the River Cree Thursday, August 15th. Get your tickets. I want to say thank you for your time, Pete, and for all those tunes of all those years, and we can't wait to see you on Thursday.
Okay, my pleasure.